Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Sis Internet Radio. Sisters in Spirit, affectionately called Sis, is a nurturing environment for women that inspires harmony in everyday living, shares resources that empower, offers information and support that nourishes the soul, balances our mental and physical well-being, and promotes inner peace and heightened spirituality. Our vision is a world where women live consciously, harmoniously, and spiritually to positively impact our lives and the lives of those with whom we come into contact. Join us as we live life with style, grace, and of course, much joy.
Welcome to our Sisters in Spirit broadcast for Thursday, October 31st. You're here with your host, Darlene Raissa Nazaire, and I am Deborah Sky Samuels. Good evening, Darlene. How are you this evening?
I'm doing wonderful, Sky. Glad to be here with you and able to talk with Dr. Joe.
Awesome. We expect Dr. Joe to join us shortly. He's en route to the conversation, so when he dials in, he can just chime in and let us know he's on the line, and we will continue. But we're
Hi,
excited.
Hi, ladies. I'm here.
He's here.
Hi, Dr. Joe. How are you?
Very good. Very good. I'm happy to be with you.
Awesome. We're continuing our discussion of the book, Breaking the Habit of Being Yourself, and we are really excited to have the author, Dr. Joe Dispenza, with us this evening. And again, welcome, Dr. Joe.
Thank you very much.
Before we really get into our conversation, I'd like to tell our listeners a little bit more about you. Dr. Joe Dispenza is the author of the best-selling books, Breaking the Habit of Being Yourself, How to Lose Your Mind and Create a New One, which is our book that we're reading now, and Evolve Your Brain, The Science of Changing Your Mind. And he also studied biochemistry at Rutgers University. He also holds a Bachelor of Science degree with an emphasis in neuroscience, and he earned a Doctorate of Chiropractic from Life University in Atlanta, Georgia. He has received postgraduate training and continuing education in neurology, neuroscience, brain function and chemistry, cellular biology, memory formation, and aging and longevity. One of the scientists, researchers, and teachers featured in the award-winning film, What the Bleep Do We Know?, Dr. Joe has also lectured on six continents, educating people about the functions of the human brain. He has taught thousands how to reprogram their thinking through scientifically proven neurophysiological principles. Again, welcome, Dr. Joe.
Thank you very much. Thank you. I'm humbled.
Yes, and welcome to our virtual book club.
Yes, we understand this is your inaugural book club discussion. So, again, we're just really happy to have you with us. What we'd like to do this evening is to give you an opportunity to just really talk about the book. What prompted you to write this? Give us a little background on how, throughout your discussion, your teaching of the book, some of the major points or major most important points that you would want readers to take away from it. And then we will go into part three that we're looking to discuss and review this evening. So if you will, can you just share with us what prompted you to write the book and some of the main principles that we as readers should really take away?
And also we have a bunch of folks on the line and in the chat room, and so we'll open for questions before we get into the third part.
Sure, I'd love to do that. I after the movie What the Bleep Do We Know, which was pretty much an overnight sensation in the United States and around the world, one of the things that happened is that there were certain questions that people continuously asked me when I presented information in different countries. And the most common question people asked was, wow, the information in What the Bleep was really profound, and I read your book, but you know, the big question that I have is, how do we do this? How do we make change stick? And why is it so hard to change? And how do we use some of these principles to really change our lives? So I started teaching these workshops around the world, and I think this is a time in history where it's not enough to know. It's a time in history to know how. And so we created these workshops to give people the opportunity to retreat from their life for a period of time and begin to learn some really important information about quantum physics and neuroscience and neuroendocrinology and genetics and chemicals and all the things that make us up. And really, you know, I think that information is power, but information about yourself is self-empowerment. So we wanted to teach people the how-to. How do you really change? And so Breaking the Habit is a book that I wrote that is a kind of a companion book to Evolve and really hopefully answers some of those questions on how we do it. And I use science as the language to explain it because I think science is the contemporary language of mysticism. And once you start talking about tradition or culture or religion, you tend to divide an audience. And I think science at this particular time in history unifies an audience. And so I wrote the book with the intention of giving people the necessary tools that they can begin to apply to their lives. And we've seen some pretty amazing changes in people. And so what it means to change, what does meditation mean? What does science say about changing your brain waves? What is it to be greater than your environment, to be greater than your body, and to be greater than time? How do we know when we're living in a state of creativity or creation, and when are we living in those limited states of stress and survival? And how does that affect both our biology as well as the field around us? And so the book ends with a nice meditation that people can practice at home, and that's really the beginning stages. If they continue in the work that I teach, we do advanced workshops where there's just a whole lot more content and a whole lot more for people to engage in. But this is the basis, and the model of change is really unlearning and relearning. It's breaking the habit of the old self and reinventing a new self. It's pruning synaptic connections, as they say in neuroscience, and sprouting new connections. It's unmemorizing emotions that are stored in the body and then reconditioning the body to a new mind or to a new emotion, to deprogram and reprogram, to lose your mind and create a new one, or really just take your energy out of the past and use that energy to drive you to a new future. So I did my best in simplifying it so that everybody had some of the tools to begin to try it out.
Thank you. One of the things that spoke to me and I found really profound about the book is that you told us I call it the scientific why and how. When you read so many books, you just get the this is what it is, and we really need to strive to change it. But that is what spoke to me, and from conversations with other readers, that's what spoke to other people too, because now we know the science behind it. So I really appreciate you taking that approach with the book. And that's the response that we've gotten so far.
Well, that's good news. I think that when you have more information and the science is the language, I think you assign more meaning behind what you're doing. And I wanted to create each piece of information that was taught in the first two parts of the book. When you got to the third part of the book, you understood what you were doing in every step of the meditation and why. And when you assign meaning behind something, you have more intention behind it. And there's plenty of research to show that the more intention you have behind something, the better results you produce. So that was my hope.
Yeah, and would you say there's a part of you that has to get it that way before you can make a change? It's like, if it's the ego or whatever part of you it is that says, I don't understand what direction you're going in. I'm not going there with you until I get it.
I think we innately already know how to do this. I think that each and every one of us at some point in our life really has accomplished something supernatural or went against convention in some way. And I think we come preloaded with all the biological and neurological machinery to do it. I just don't think that you and I have taken the time in the beginning part of our lives to really understand it and make it a skill. And if you can reproduce it, and you can do something over and over again, it becomes a scientific law. It's bridging on and verging on a scientific principle. So there's always a part of us that doesn't want to move forward, and that part of us that doesn't want to move forward is clinging to the familiar feelings that are based in the known, that are comfortable to us, that have become familiar to us. So We usually wait for a crisis or disease or trauma or diagnosis or loss to really to make a decision to change. And I think that's human nature. And my message is, why wait? You know, you can learn and change in a state of pain and suffering, or you can learn and change in a state of joy and inspiration. And the book, hopefully, was a little toolbox to give people the inspiration to do it when they don't reach that place. So I think we innately already know how to do it. I think we haven't made it a skill, and there's always a part of us that's always concerned about stepping into the unknown, into the unpredictable, because when you reach that place, then all of a sudden you're crossing the river of change, and for a lot of people that's pretty scary.
Thank you. I want to remind our callers that we are on the line with Dr. Joe Dispenza, author of the book Breaking the Habit of Being Yourself. And if you'd like to ask Dr. Joe a question, please press 1 so that we could recognize you and bring you into the conversation.
And we'd like to bring the questions on early on, as Dr. Joe is only with us for the first half of the show.
Yes, definitely. Dr. Joe, I would like to ask you, you know, through as we went through the first two parts of the book, it was more or less giving us the information to apply to part three. If we can just move into part three, unless you have other comments that you'd like to make about the first two parts before we go into part three. But I do have some questions there that I'd like to make sure that we cover before the end of our conversation with you. So if you have additional comments about the first two sections that you really want us to know, that we really need to pull from that, please share that with us, and then we can move into part three.
No, I'm happy to follow your lead, ladies. I'm very comfortable with the both of you. So wherever you want to go, I'll happily move with you.
Okay, so in part three, we started talking about we started putting into application the information that was revealed in part one and two. And it's basically giving us the process of meditation. What is it in that section that we really need to take with us? I have a couple of questions, but I want to get from you first. What are the main principles of meditation and that section of part three that we really need to take with us?
Sure. Well, the whole purpose of meditation is to get beyond the analytical mind. And what separates the conscious mind from the subconscious mind is the analytical mind. And 95% of who we are by the time we're in our mid-30s is pretty much a set of memorized behaviors, emotional reactions, beliefs and perceptions and attitudes that function subconsciously just like a computer program. So one thought, one reaction to some cue in your external environment, and for the most part, the body as the mind begins to run the program. So when it comes time to change, most people are using 5% of their conscious mind to go against 95% of what they've memorized. So you can think positively all you want with the 5% of your conscious mind, but if you've memorized negatively subconsciously, that's mind and body in opposition. Or if you have a vision with a new life and a brand new SUV and a new car and, you know, a new relationship, and you have all the pictures in your house to remind you of that, but you feel unworthy, your mind and body are in opposition. So the purpose of that section was really to teach people that you can get beyond the analytical mind by changing your brainwaves. And the research that we've studied, we now know that you can't use the brain to change the brain. It won't work. You can't use the program to change the program. It only endorses the program. And you can't use the ego to change the ego. It just makes the ego more empowered. So we come to that point where your brainwaves have to change from that kind of beta thinking analytical state to a more relaxed state called alpha. And so in beta, the outer world is more real than the inner world. But in alpha, now all of a sudden, your inner world is becoming more real than the outer world, and the neocortex, which plugs us into the external environment, settles down. And when it settles down, now you're moving towards the operating system. So we use the method of meditation to get beyond your body, its addictions and its habituations, to get beyond the environment, which for the most part you're closing off your senses to the external world, and really transcend linear time. And when you become nobody, no one, no thing, nowhere, no time, and you become pure consciousness, that's the moment you walk through the door to the quantum field. And so we go from the selfish state to a selfless state. And it's only when we get to this moment that we begin to experience transcendent states. And so the word meditation means to become familiar with. So the first part of the meditation is for us to become conscious of our unconscious thoughts, to begin to notice and pay attention to our habits and behaviors and the things that we say, and then to begin to look at the emotions that we've memorized that keep us connected to the past. And if you can just observe them and become familiar with them, you're actually going into the operating system and you're becoming conscious of, for the most part, what most people are unconscious of. And so the more you do that and the more familiar you become with it, the more dominion and control you have in your waking day to not go unconscious and return back to the old self. So most people don't like to light a match in a dark place, but that's the first step, because the biggest and the hardest part about change is not making the same choices you did the day before. So it requires then a certain level of awareness, and the first step in change is the unlearning process. So then the second part of the meditation really is to become familiar with a new state of being and a new state of mind. So as you begin to rehearse a new way of being in your mind, you're going to force your brain to fire in new sequences and new patterns and new combinations. And whenever you begin to think differently or you begin to make your brain work differently, you're changing your mind. So as you remind yourself of who you no longer want to be and then you remind yourself of who you do want to be, you begin to install the neurological circuits in your brain so that you have the hardware in place, so when you get up from your waking day and engage your waking day, you have primed your brain to use those particular circuits, and so your behavior will match your intentions. And if you can cultivate an emotion and teach your body what it feels like ahead of the actual experience of how that event's going to feel, you're giving your body a sampling of the future. And if you do that every single day, you'll become familiar with a new state of mind and body. And so now your brain and body are no longer living in the past, but if you do it properly, your brain and body are already living in the future, because there's physical evidence that it looks like the experience has happened. And when your thoughts and your feelings or your mind and body are altered, you're in a new state of being, and a new state of being is a new personality, and a new personality creates a new personal reality. So that was the intention behind the third part of the book.
Okay, thank you. I have a question that going back to the beginning of that third part, Chapter 10. When you talk about induction and the two methods of induction, body parts and the method of water rising, in body parts, and I've listened to your tapes, in body parts, what I'm getting confused about is when you talk about looking, concentrating on a part of the body and then seeing your body in space, are you talking about the immediate space around your body? Somehow that's not clicking for me as to how I'm supposed to be concentrating and looking at my body. Am I supposed to be looking at, from an observer point of view, the different parts of my body and the space immediately around it, or my body in the room? I'm somehow having an issue with grasping that.
It's a great question. And you notice that never in my entire book did I ever use the word visualization. I never said to visualize anything.
Yes.
And the research shows that when you're under the chemicals of stress, we tend to become very narrow-focused. We become object-focused. We obsess about one particular thing. That's what happens, is our focus kind of converges on some object. And so that's why we obsess about our problems, we obsess about our weight, we obsess about our relationships, whatever. We obsess about something, we brain loop. Well, that's not really the type of focus that creates a destiny. That's called an emergency focus, and that's like when your mother said to you, watch the step, you know, tie your shoes, watch the car. That kind of emergency focus is what really limits the capacity of the brain. So when you begin to open your focus and you can sense a part of your body in space, like if I said to you, can you sense the space between your temples in space? And if you can just become aware and notice that there's a space between both of your temples, the moment you do that, you start to open your focus. Now, if I said to you, can you sense the space around your temples in space and the volume of space around those temples in space? And if you can sense and notice the field around your head or around your temples, you're beginning to cause a divergent focus, and you're opening your focus. And that's when the brain begins to recalibrate into very organized and synchronized alpha brainwave patterns, not just alpha, but highly synchronized and highly organized patterns. And that's when different compartments of the brain begin to talk to each other, and you start to feel more whole and more like yourself. So it's really a process. If I said to you, can you sense or can you notice your left heel? If you put your awareness in your left heel, you're doing exactly what I said. If
okay.
I said to you, now can you put your awareness beyond your left heel and around your left heel? And if you could become aware of the space around it, that's all I'm asking you to do, because when you're sensing and you're feeling, you're not thinking. And if you're not thinking, you're settling down the neocortex and all of its analytical facilities.
So it's not visualization.
You may get a picture. If I said to you, focus on the space around your chest in space, you may get a picture initially of your chest, but that's only just to orient you as a coordinate.
Right.
But then what you're doing is you're sensing that space around it, or the space around your shoulders. It's becoming aware of space. Instead of focusing on the particle in quantum physics, you're focusing on the wave.
It's
really interesting because, again and again, the research shows when you focus on nothing, when you focus on space, that's the time when the brain gets very organized.
And so it could be that, like you said, in a moment of stress and just starting out on this, as I practice it more, then it'll become more intuitive, and
exactly.
I'll be able to settle down a little bit more and focus more and really get a better understanding of it, because it probably
Absolutely.
Is. Okay. Okay.
And it's like a skill. It's just like anything else, you know. In the beginning, you're kind of analyzing if you're doing it right. But really what you want to do is you want to linger in space.
Mm.
That's what you want to do. In the beginning, you know, the mind always likes to check in with everything, and it's running through all the things it has to do during the day, and, you know, you feel certain feelings in your body. That's the body, the environment, and time. But if you just notice that you're becoming unfocused and you just return back to doing it, you're taming the body. You're basically settling down the animal. You're conditioning the body to a new mind. And so in the beginning it takes a little effort, but when we did our research this year in February, and then again in July in our advanced workshops, when people that have been practicing this particular meditation, this induction, we measured to see how fast they could change their brainwaves. Now, the national average to alter your brainwaves when a meditation is about a minute and a half. Some people were doing it in 4 seconds, 5 seconds, 9 seconds. They just developed the skill. It's not like who can get there first, but they developed the skill because they practiced it so many times, they were able to alter their brainwaves in a matter of seconds. That's the kind of skill that you can develop if you keep practicing.
Yeah, okay. Thank you.
So let's open the line. We've got a couple of questions. And for the callers, we'll call the last 4 digits of your phone number, and you can ask your question. So 8511, you're on the line.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, Sisters in Spirit, and thank you very much, Dr. Dispenza, for coming on with our book club and just letting us speak to you and letting us get some clarity. And just then as you was answering Deborah's question, it really brought me to a present, and I really got it just now. Before you said the word awareness, that's what it does. It makes us conscious. It puts us in the presence, and it makes us aware. Now, I've meditated for years, but reading this book has really let me understand, to put it in perspective, now I understand what the meditation is doing. It really brings you to a present. It really gives you that consciousness that, you know, a lot of the books talk about, and now we understand exactly what the three brain and the delta, you really put it all together. So now when I do meditate, it's from a total different perspective, but I really understand. I'm really aware of the consciousness that state that I'm in.
Here's the beauty behind that. If you're conscious, consciousness is awareness. Awareness is paying attention, and paying attention is noticing. So you're not your physical body, although we believe we are, but you're the energy that's around your body, and you're using, that energy is using your body like a puppet and manipulating matter. So if you keep your attention on matter, on your body, the whole entire time, where you put your attention is where you put your energy, and then all of a sudden, you're putting your attention on the particle instead of the wave. The moment you begin to open your focus and you begin to sense the space around your body in space, you're putting your attention on the true self. You're putting your attention on the wave of possibility. And the longer you can linger in the awareness of the space around you in space, you begin to open your focus, and wherever you place your attention is where you place your energy. Now you're putting your energy on the field around you, and that begins to cause the body to settle down into the present moment. And that's the biggest reason why people really don't have their dreams come true in the process of meditation, because they haven't really found the sweet spot of the present moment. The induction is so important, because if you practice that, the rest gets very easy, because now you're in the kingdom of heaven. You are in the place where all things happen. Nice. Getting there is the art.
You're in the space of infinite possibility.
Right. Exactly.
Thank you. It's an awesome book. Everybody I meet, I tell them about this book.
Sweet.
All the strangers, I tell them, you got to get this book. It's with me all the time. And so, it's really awesome. We're writing the Oprah Show. You need to be on Super Soul Sunday. Really.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm humbled.
If we move on to Chapter 11, it talks about, it starts the different steps that we can take to start to prune away the habits of being yourself. And you talk about recognizing, admitting, declaring, the four steps, surrendering. And I found that in the process of doing that, you start feeling like these different types of emotions, and, I guess that's the learned emotions that you talk about, and the body starts taking over, and it's like, okay, this is kind of painful. I don't want to deal with that. So is that just a process of just continuing to practice it? You talk about recognizing, taking the self-evaluation, looking at yourself, recognizing and identifying the self-limiting beliefs, and identifying the problems that you want to overcome, and admitting, owning up to who you are and what your past mistakes have been and what you want to change, declaring. When I first saw declaring, I was like, do I have to say this out loud to other people? And then I remembered earlier in the book you said it's not about that. It's about declaring it to the greater good, the infinite universe, the infinite energy. And to declare, what we've been hiding about ourselves, to declare you related it back to the gap, and I really felt that when it went back to the gap, declaring what is really the difference between the you that you show to the world and the real you that is behind closed doors and the only, the you that only you know about. So once you start getting into these emotional states and the body starts, rejecting it, the learned emotions come back, is it really just coming back to it over and over again so that you can get it? Because I found this to be kind of troubling to me, and it was like, we really don't want to go there, and it's kind of painful if you want to really be honest about it.
Well, here's the question. I mean, who's uncomfortable? It's the body-mind that's uncomfortable. It's not you, the spiritual being that wants to grow and evolve and create new and wonderful things and have an amazing mystical future. Mm-hmm. It's the body that's become the mind emotionally that does not want anybody to know exactly how it is. So when you begin to, admit who you've been and what you've been hiding, now all of a sudden you're taking a part of yourself that you want to transmute. And then when you inwardly admit and then you outwardly declare, the moment you say it, that you're freeing the body from the past. The body doesn't want to say that. The body doesn't want to do that. But if you say it, there'll be a release of energy.
Right.
So then you recognize, you admit, you declare, and then you surrender it to a greater mind. And this, what most people don't understand, and it took me so long to get this, that it's this intelligence is real. You're not making this up. There's an observer that's observing you, that is, that you are an extension of. And when you get, you are talking to this observer like you're talking to someone who loves you and knows you better than anybody, and it's your confidant. When you make, you really get that understanding, it's a loving intelligence, an intelligent love. It's both the mother and the father combined, nurturing and intentional. And so you're speaking to a consciousness that has an awareness, and you have to be present with it. So just like any parent, if you have children and you see your kid is stuck in some particular state, the first thing you're going to do is you're going to sit them down and you're going to make them recognize what the problem is. Then you're going to make them admit to the problem, like, come on, you're doing this. You know you're doing it. Now I want to hear you say it. Come on, mm-hmm. Say it. You're doing it. Now, once you've declared it inwardly and outwardly and you recognize it, if you're truly going to surrender, I'm going to help you. I'm going to help you get to another level. So there's so much more of life to live than a 10-year-old kid who thinks he's got it all worked out. There's a whole rest of your life that is experiences that are so much greater. But if you don't get beyond this, you're going to miss out on some really fundamental opportunities. So you're speaking to a great parent, and this great parent, it has an amazing amount of unconditional love, and it already knows the answers to the problems and to the limitations. But it honors free will, and it will never intervene unless you ask it. And it, because it honors free will, if you're super happy being unhappy, it says, okay, I'll endorse that state of being. But if you come to the altar in sincerity and humility and honesty and a certain level of integrity, it's so important for people to understand that you're speaking to something that is absolutely real, and you got to go to a greater consciousness to help you resolve this. And so why not begin to get humble and vulnerable, because there's a tremendous amount of power in that, and then surrendering means, I don't know how to do this, but you certainly do, so I'm going to give this up to you.
And as you quoted Einstein, you can't solve a problem at the same level of its occurrence. And the other thing is that this universal parent, this great parent, is not a human parent. And so, as you say in the book, there's no punishment or judgment or manipulation. Yes. It's none of that. It's just pure love.
Yeah, all that was created by insecure men, by the way.
Yes.
Right.
But
I really appreciate that, and I know others too. You know, once you get to the admitting process, that there is no judgment and none of the other things that come along with admitting, you know, there's a problem, there's something wrong or what you've been doing up until this point. And then giving thanks after you've surrendered it, you know, that's, you know, just takes it to a whole nother level to give thanks after you've done that.
Because
if we move on to chapter 12, we talk about dismantling the memory of the old. Uh-huh.
Dr. Joe had a comment.
Just going to say that when you give thanks, gratitude means the event has already occurred. You give thanks when it's happened. So if you're giving thanks before it's made manifest, what you're really saying is, I accept it as already done. And so when people, we've been conditioned and hypnotized into believing that you give thanks after the event, well, that's the Newtonian cause and effect model of reality. Yeah. Giving thanks before the event is made manifest is the quantum causing an effect. And so when you truly feel gratitude that something greater is going to take it for you, and you're giving thanks that you know some greater mind is going to do it, get ready, because mystical and wonderful things will happen in your life truly as a result of it.
Ready.
In chapter 12, we talk about, Risa, did you have something?
No, I just want to respect Dr. Joe's time. So are you still with Dr. Joe?
I'm fine, ladies.
Okay,
thank you. In Chapter 12, we talk about dismantling the memory of the old you, observing the old self, and to look at and to remind yourself of who you no longer want to be, and then observe the conscious of the habitual state of mind, the old habits, the self-limiting beliefs. Just can you elaborate on that just a little bit more, and dismantling the memory of the old you?
Sure. I mean, because of the size of our frontal lobe, that forebrain allows us with a tremendous amount of awareness to think about what we're thinking about, to notice how we've been acting, and to pay attention to how we're feeling. Now, the moment you can observe who you're being, in that moment, it means you're no longer the program. You are now the consciousness observing the program, and that's the moment you begin to disentangle and separate yourself from your subjective mind. You begin to objectify your subjective self, which means you're looking at yourself through the eyes of someone else, means you're no longer you. And the more you can observe yourself, just like if you were playing a sport or learning how to dance or standing in front of an audience in public speaking, the more you saw video footage of yourself hitting a tennis ball or a golf ball or dancing the salsa or standing up and giving a presentation, the more you can observe yourself, the more you can self-correct. So you have to, the brain learns by mistakes and it learns by surprises. So if you're observing yourself in a limited state, but you're not observing it in judgment, you're just going, oh my God, I can do this better. At the end of your life, when this whole thing is over and your reality rolls up, you're going to have a chance to observe yourself then. So you can do it now or you can do it then. And so when you truly get a good, clear observation of self, now you can begin to make some different choices. And this is where you start to really climb out of the old self. And so, again, a lot of people, they don't like to light a match in a dark place, but this is really how we do it. So otherwise, in a matter of moments, you'll return back to going unconscious, and your habituations and your body-mind will be in control again. So it's important to dismantle the old self, because the more you are observing it, the less you're it. And the more you observe it, nerve cells that no longer fire together, no longer wire together. And you're no longer signaling the same genes in the same ways. And now you are literally someone else observing you. And now you're pure consciousness. And that's when you begin to really gain dominion over those unconscious states.
Thank you. When you're going through the redirecting phase, or, and I guess this is still part of the dismantling the memory of the old you, do you really need to go through the outward process of, say, changing your environment, if there are certain people that trigger certain undesirable emotions? Is it necessary to do the outward aspect, or is it all inward work?
Yeah, I think it's a little bit of both. I mean, again, it doesn't have to be a linear process. It's just a process in which should naturally unfold for ourselves. So however a person's comfortable in doing it, I tell them to just trust the process.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. I want to take a moment to remind our members that we are, our listeners, that we are talking to Dr. Joe Dispenza, author of the book, Breaking the Habit of Being Yourself. And if you have a question, please press the number 1. So that we can bring you onto the line with Dr. Joe. Raisa, did you have any questions or comments that you would like to share at this time?
Yeah, I have a question around a statement that you made as to when you have an emotion and you use hatred as an example. And so if you're hating someone, the hate keeps you emotionally attached to the other person. I get that. And I wanted you to expound a little further about what that does in the body and what it's creating.
Well, it's a very interesting concept because when you live by those emotions that that are familiar emotions that are driven by the hormones of stress and survival, for the most part, those chemicals on the long term push the genetic buttons that create disease. So if a person is addicted to judgment, if they're addicted to prejudice, if they're addicted to hatred, it's those emotional states in the long term that keep signaling the same gene in the same way. So when great mystics walk the planet and spiritual leaders walk the planet, they were very clear on the message that when you judge someone, you're judging yourself. When you hate someone, you really hate yourself. What you're really doing is you're sending the emotional signal of hate to your cells. You're sending the emotional signal of judgment and prejudice to your own cells. And really, the only person that's really getting the effects is really you. So you're using that person in your life to reaffirm your emotional addiction to hate so that you can remember exactly who you believe you are based on your past experience. And if you do that enough times, you'll literally be, you can't create a new future because you're too anchored in the past.
I think that's projection leads not its source, as A Course in Miracles says.
Exactly.
Okay, as we're moving on to Chapter 13, Create a New Mind for Your New Future, creating and rehearsing, creating the ideal of yourself and rehearsing it until it becomes the new you. One of the things I would like to say about this section, too, is that I so appreciate the steps that we're taking in terms of the process of meditating and the written work, because that resonates with me so well, because when I'm really trying to install something into my mind, I write it, and that helps me really focus on it and to better memorize it. So I really appreciate the written work that we have to do in this process and then go on and actually go through the process and put it into action. So you have a list of open-ended questions to force the mind to think and fire in new ways. Rehearsing, creating the new ideal of yourself. I don't know, it was something about that as I was reading through it, that is it along the lines, and it might be a little bit deeper than, well, it could be deeper, but what came to my mind is, like in business, they tell you to fake it until you make it. Is that what we're doing, or we're doing something a little deeper than that?
No, we're not faking it till we make it, because
okay.
Fake it till you make it means then that you don't believe it's possible. If you're truly making the thought your experience, if I asked you to have a sexual fantasy and you got involved in that sexual fantasy and you let the thought become your experience, you would fire neurotransmitters that would produce a level of mind that would make neuropeptides that would then signal a whole host of hormones in your body, and your body would begin to change. And you would open your eyes and you would be feeling differently than when you started, would you not?
Yes.
Or if you were thinking about telling off a coworker and you were driving to work and becoming involved in that process, you would, by the time you arrived to work, you would be in a whole different state because you allowed the thought to become the experience.
Yeah.
So if you're going to focus on, if you're going to obsess about your worst-case scenario in your life and you're going to get so involved in that that you produce the emotions of fear and anxiety, I'm asking you to obsess about the greatest-case scenario in your life and produce the same emotions until you do the same exact effect.
But in a positive manner.
Exactly.
Okay. All right.
Good question, though.
You know, they tell you in business, see who you want to be, and that's what kind of struck me as I was reading it. It says, you know, this is, if you want to be a florist, then you should think, act, talk, and do everything that you think a florist is supposed to do and you will eventually become a florist, but you have to put in the work. So that's what I was talking about. That's what came to mind, you know, just thinking. But I understand what you're saying, because you're adding the emotional content, the emotional component, and your body is physically reacting.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly. And we all, again, we look, think of a time in your life where you did something great. And you really made your mind up to do it. You became inspired. You became passionate. You had a vision. You were clear on your vision.
Mm-hmm.
You were motivated. You were disciplined. Well, those were all the ingredients that you came out of your resting state, and you accomplished that end because you were never too busy. You made it a priority, and you never stopped thinking about it. You were possessed by that. And if you made a mistake or you fell from grace, you brushed yourself off and you kept going. That's greatness right there.
Yeah.
But think of a time in your life where you wanted to accomplish something and you didn't accomplish it. What happened then?
Mm-hmm.
You got tired, you got lazy, you didn't have a vision, you never came out of your resting state, you were angry, you were frustrated, you were impatient, you were undisciplined, you know, there was too many people and things that got in your way.
Mm-hmm.
And that's pretty much mediocrity. So when you decide and make up your mind about something and you truly do this, you are uncompromising to that vision. You know, you get a lot of universal intelligence in the process of doing that, and that's this. I'm asking you to do that every day and see where it leads you.
Mm. Yes, thank you.
Yeah.
I do see that we have a caller. I'm going to bring the caller onto the line by calling the last four digits of your phone number. Caller 0411, you're on the line.
Yes, peace and love. This is Dr. Shay.
Hi, Dr. Shay. How are you?
I'm doing very, very well. Thank you for asking. I was compelled to call in because I'm so pleased that, you know, the book is being received so well. I recommended the book to Darlene, and I'm just so happy that she shared it with everyone, and everyone is having such a great benefit. I wanted to thank the doctor because I've been able to utilize this technique with my clients who come to me with different challenges, medical challenges that would normally be beyond what medical doctors would say was possible. But by having them change their neural net or change their personality or disconnect from their past emotions or belief systems, they're able to recreate their expectations. And it's really been effective in saving people's lives in some very dire situations. So I give thanks for that, and I wanted to just call in and express the appreciation for the work that you've done and how well put together everything is laid out to be used. So I'm not going to take up time. It's just wanted to say thank you, and I'm really, really pleased that it's been so well received.
And I have to echo on that because when Dr. Shay told me about the book, like Deborah, I told everybody, you got to read this book. It is life-changing, life-transforming.
Absolutely.
That we should be teaching in elementary school. And we have to figure out a way to get this knowledge to our youngsters so that they're not making all of the same mistakes that we made. Of course, you have to grow and learn and experience and all of that. But at a young age, you can learn how those neural net connections are made and how to undo them.
Absolutely. It's really powerful stuff. Dr. Dispenza, you did an excellent, excellent job of laying it out and compiling everything in a format that's readable and doable and understandable, because people have to look at it and say, oh, yeah, there I am. I'm right there. That's what I do, and I can clearly understand why I find myself in the same situations over and over again. So I thank you so much for that, and I'm not going to take up any more time. See you guys. I'm getting ready for New York, and I'm going to move on. But thank you so much, everybody.
Thank you for
recommending the book, Dr. Shay.
Well, it was amazing to me. I was at Agape with my friends, Reverend Michael Beckwith and Ricky Beebe, and I was wandering around the bookstore, and I saw the book, and it reached out and grabbed me and said, come and get me. And I have it's my traveling companion. It's in my travel book, in my travel bag right now. It goes with me. People on the plane always are writing down the title of it, and it's so many conversations have been generated from people just reading the title of the book. So, you know, it's a lot of people who want to change their personality. So it's a timely piece. It's really right on time. So everybody have a good night. Continue with the wonderful conversation and discussion. It's absolutely fabulous. Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Talk to you later.
Good night.
Bye-bye.
Okay, and as we wrap up with Chapter 14, Demonstrating and Being Transparent, Creating the New You, Demonstrating the New Being You Created Every Day, All Day. And you mentioned it earlier, Dr. Jill, that it's about being this person on a constant basis. And when those old emotions and, you know, those old self-limiting beliefs pop up, we just redirect, right?
Yeah, I don't mind that we fall from grace. I mean, we all do. And it's just how long you're going to stay there.
Right.
You know, I mean, the hardest part is getting your behaviors to match your intentions, to trust in the unknown, to step out there and take it out for a test drive. And so all of this that you're doing to cultivate a new state of being is to be able to call it up on command. That's the whole purpose. So in your waking day, you get bumped around a little bit, and you take a couple hard knocks. You got to be emotionally intelligent. If you're not, it's going to turn into a mood and a temperament, and it's going to become part of your personality, and you're going to have a bad attitude, and you just lost sight of your vision again, so or your ideal. So if the key then is just to notice that you've lost it or moved out of balance. But the blessing is that you have the resources now to be able to stop and reboot again.
Yes.
And so this is the hard part, because you can't go do your meditation and be all spiritual and then get in the car and flip people off and cut them off on the freeway. I mean, you're doing the meditation because you don't want to feel guilty that you're not doing something. But the real practical application is really then you got to be greater than anything in your environment, and you should want the initiation to challenge you so that you're greater than it. And that's when you start to find the thrill and the excitement of it.
It will definitely challenge you. One thing I can say that I've experienced, and if we have time and others can share, other readers can share, there's incidences at work where I would automatically feel that fear feeling in the pit of my stomach. And so now I don't feel it because I feel more embraced by the universe and able to move forward positively. And I look for it. I noticed that I started looking for the feeling, and then I was like, oh, okay, it's not even going to come. It's not there. And the times when it did show up, I realized that it was a reflex and not me. It was just a habit.
Exactly. And that's when you know then the old you is literally biologically dying.
Oh, yes. One thing that I've started using is change. I really say change when I feel myself creeping back. So I really started doing that. I started using the meditation process, and I'm taking that really slowly because I truly want to learn and absorb each step. But I am using change, though, because I can feel when there's a shift. So I'll just say, okay, change, you know, just redirect, just change it, okay? So that's been very helpful to me as well. So as we start to wind down, Dr. Joe, if you'd like to share some last comments with us, we would appreciate that. And then please let us know how to contact you, your contact information, website. If you are working on any projects that you'd like to share with us, please do that as well.
Sure. Well, I think I'm so humbled and so honored that you found such value in the book. I wrote the book for people like all of you that really are interested in really applying some of these principles. And I think the greatest compliment that you could ever give me is to be the living example of it. And send me an email and say, you know, you're not going to believe this, but I did this meditation for 8 weeks and wow, these are the changes that happened in my life. And that's the greatest compliment for me, because now I know that I'm making a difference. So we've had such amazing experiences with people over the last couple years, the last 3 years, that we're at the point now in our advanced workshops where we've brought in a team of neuroscientists and quantum physicists and researchers to measure transformation in our participants. And common people like all of us are doing the uncommon, and we're capturing those transformations in their brain scans, and all of it is to just be able to gather more information to teach transformation better. And we're making some pretty amazing history right now. We've seen people heal themselves of MS and lupus and traumatic brain injuries and Parkinson's disease and cancers and rare genetic disorders that medical science had no solution for. We're really seeing some phenomenal things happen by people just really making these internal changes. And so it's become my passion, and it's become my desire to really contribute in this way. So my website is just drjoedispenza.com, and I have a new book coming out next year. I just finished it actually this week. It's called You Are the Placebo, Making Your Mind Matter, and it's a lot of some of the later stuff that we've been doing in the workshops and conferences around the world, and again, teaching people how to be their own placebo, of course, transcends the medical model and all the conventional models, and we'll show some of the brain scans of some people that did the uncommon. So that's where I'm at right now, and I just thank you for allowing me to contribute.
Thank you so much for being with us, taking time out of your day to be with us. And we've totally enjoyed and definitely learned from the time that you spent with us this evening. Raisa, did you want to have some additional comments as we wind down?
Not on the book itself, but I did have a particular line or quote from the book that I wanted to leave everyone with, and that's, it's time to wake up and to be the living example of the truth.
Oh, wow, awesome. Okay, well, with that, we'll just start winding down. Dr. Joe, we do like to end with a quote or a saying that we like to leave our listeners with, and if you'd like to have a final word that you would like to leave our listeners with, we would appreciate that.
Okay, if you sit down and emulate the divine every single day and you take time out of your busy life to emulate the Creator as an observer of your destiny, then you should be willing and provocative enough to beseech it to ask for a sign in your life, and you should always ask it to bring it in a way that you least expect, that surprises you, and that leaves no doubt that what you did inside of you produced some result outside of you. And when you can correlate the changes you make inside of you with the results you produce outside of you, you'll pay attention to what you did and you'll do it again, and that's called human empowerment. And there's not a person on the planet, independent of their race, their color of their skin, their gender, their intellectual ability, their culture, that is excluded from this phenomenon, that we all are connected to the divine. And the biggest lie I think we've been told is that we're linear beings living a linear life, that all of us are connected and expressing some aspect of the divine through us. And I think when we begin to remove those masks and layers that block the flow of the divine in us, then we become more like it. We become more loving. We become more conscious. We become more mindful. We become more giving, because that's its mind. And that's how we change the world.
Thank you very much for showing that, for sharing that. Just to remind our listeners, you've been listening to Sisters in Spirit and our special guest, Dr. Joe Dispenza, who is the author of the book that we've been reading for the last 2 months, Breaking the Habit of Being Yourself, How to Lose Your Mind and Create a New One. Thank you again so much, Dr. Joe, for being with us and just sharing this knowledge to help us really benefit from the reading that we're doing and the practices that we're putting in place. We do appreciate it. And we'd like to thank our listeners, too, for being here with us. Just really take into consideration everything that you've heard and that Dr. Joe has shared. And do contact his website and let him know how you're coming along. I plan to do that and to share it with us as well. Thank you for being
with us. Our next book will be Being Over the Hurdles of Life, A Tiger's Journey. And that you can take the experience that we get out of Dr. Joe's book and read this book, which is mine. And we address the taboo of the topic of mental health, dealing with genius and how it overlaps with mental distress, and provides tips on well-being.
Thank you. And we're going to discuss that when, darling?
I believe it's the 17th of November.
Mm-hmm. Okay, we'll, yes, I think so, but we'll get the exact date. Again, thank you for being with us. Thank you, Dr. Joe. You've been
listening.
Thank you, ladies. In spirit.
Okay, good night.
Good night.
Good night.
Thank you.
You've been listening to This Internet Radio. Until the next time, enjoy the fluid flow of life. You've been listening to This Internet Radio. Until the next time, enjoy the fluid flow of life by remembering to infuse harmony into your everyday living.
Mm-hmm.